Go.
Welcome to the Passive Aggressive Podcast, special Columbus Day edition. I'm comedian Mike Vecchio, comedian Ben Rosenfeld, and special guest comedian Eric Bronstein.
Woo,
he's here. He's in the building.
Bobby has gone exploring something or other. He confirmed last night at midnight he'd be here 2:45. It's 3:05. He's not here. His phone's going to silent.
Bobby's phone has gone dead, everybody.
I'm not replacing him permanently. He will be back.
No, if Bobby doesn't come back, if Bobby goes missing, you have to... That's our rule, is if someone goes missing, whoever was the guest that week, they're the new co-host. That's just how that works.
That's how we do it.
How was your weekend, Mike?
Ben, you're asking me about my weekend. That's so much better than last week when you didn't give a shit about anybody's weekend. You just wanted to get to topics. You kept stepping on our weekend stories. My weekend was good. I stayed in town, which was relaxing. I had 3 spots on Friday and then 5 spots on Saturday.
Quit bragging.
And then a couple spots. No, not bragging. I'm just letting you know what I did this weekend. It's like reading what I did this weekend. And then Sunday, I did a couple of spots. So it was a New York City weekend. There's a lot of out-of-towners here, as we were talking about before the show. A lot of people who come to comedy shows and really don't know how to conduct themselves at comedy shows. That's what I found this weekend, and regardless of club. And it was just a lot of tourists who don't usually go to comedy shows. I got the feeling that they went to a comedy show for the first time, and I think their idea of a comedy show is to go and start a dialogue with a comic when he's trying to ask rhetorical questions to get into jokes. So I don't know if you found that, but that's what I did. Drank a little bit on Friday, downed a bottle of wine with the girl.
I thought you were going to say whiskey.
No. One bottle
of
piece.
Down a bottle of wine?
Down a bottle of wine. I downed a bottle of red. She downed a bottle of white. It was like a Billy Joel song. And then...
when you guys kissed, did it become rosé wine?
It was a good one, Ben. You know what? It didn't hit, but I like your effort. Oh, by the way, I parked. I'm having trouble because I go... Speaking of things that don't work, I do hot yoga before I come here in order to stretch and bend. I finally got a good yoga joke.
Yeah?
Ooh. Okay, here it goes. It's, I started doing hot yoga. Oh, it's the joke to get into the joke. Is, we did a backward bend, and she's like, backward bend, all the way back, look through the window. And it's, I was looking through the window. I was like, oh yeah, I could see my chiropractor's office. That's where I'm going to go next, because I shouldn't be bending my back this way. That's one that kind of hits, and then it's like, it's a joke actually that we came up with on the podcast. It's I originally started going to hot yoga to meet girls, but I find that if you get good enough at hot yoga, you don't need a girl because you can suck your own dick. That's the joke. Those have been hitting kind of hard.
That was a podcast joke that came out just organically?
No, because it was organically because Bobby was like, you have to go.
I knew somehow that he would create that.
You have to go to Manhattan, and you guys you'll find your wives in these cousins. And now we both have girlfriends, and it has nothing to do with yoga.
Nothing to do with yoga.
So, but my thing is, so I'm trying to find... I come from yoga, which is across Astoria. It's on the other side of Astoria.
It used to be on my block.
Used to be right on his block. So now I'm trying different methods. The bus doesn't work. The 101 bus.
Never shows
if anybody up. From the 101 bus is listening, any operators is a big fuck you to the 101, which may come or may not come. I've never seen a public transportation system run that way.
To be clear, it's the Q101, not Q-101. The M101. For our Manhattan listeners, yes. They might not... That bus is reliable.
The Q101 just may come or it may not come. It's just a matter of... So, I drove today. I drove, and then I had to find parking at yoga, which is hard, and then had to come to this dirty, dirty neighborhood where Ben lives.
Which is 4 blocks away from Mike's apartment.
Which is 4 blocks away, but a different world, if you will.
I have a question, though. You say you do hot yoga. Why do you do hot yoga?
It makes me feel... It opens up my chest. It opens up my spine. It makes me feel really good, and I sweat out all the toxins. Like, I'm an anxiety-ridden, tightly wound guy, and that yoga really, like, it addresses all the weaknesses that I have, which there are a lot of them.
You're doing it more of a therapeutic, psychological
type. Therapeutic, psychological, but it also makes my body feel a lot better. Like, my lung capacity has gone way up, so now when I run or do anything cardiovascular, I can go, like, much, much longer now just because it's expanded my lung capacity. I don't know. That sounds weird. It doesn't sound like that would factor into it, but it really does. It really makes a difference.
Plus, when he smokes pot, now he can take a bigger hit.
I am zooted out of my mind.
One hit, he's pot. Done.
I read this thing here because some people do it to lose weight. Oh, some people do hot yoga to lose weight.
Right.
I read this article. They said that that's a fallacy, that it actually doesn't work for that.
Really?
Yeah. It was Sunday Times or a couple weeks
ago. I tried hot yoga for, I did like 20 out of 30 days, hoping I'd lose weight. It stayed about the same.
Yeah, they said because they think, oh, you're sweating stuff out, but it's...
But you just get hungrier and you drink more water, so it just balances out.
You put it back.
I felt better. The first time, I didn't like run for a couple months, and then after hot yoga stopped, I went running, and I felt the lungs were easier. Plus, I was breathing through my nose instead of my mouth, and that seems to help, too.
Right. I mean, I went running. I was in Aruba, and I went running, and it was really, really hot, but I was able to maintain my composure because you feel like you're going to jump out of your skin sometimes. You start getting panicky in the hot room.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that at all.
Well, you start getting panicky, but then you adjust to it, and that's the thing. It's like there can be no growth without some kind of suffering, Eric. I hate to end on that kind of a note.
We should change our category from comedy podcast to self-help.
Is it hotter than a sauna?
No, it's about 100. And was it 105?
Yeah, it's more wet than a sauna. A sauna is like this dry heat that like it hurts to move.
Right.
You can move in here.
I can't stay in a sauna for more than 5 minutes. I can't take it. It's just too much.
Well, they say the first goal of it is to stay in the room. And I was like, I wasn't good at wrestling, but I wrestled in a great program. So I was like, I managed to stay in that program for a year at least. So it's like, I'm not going to have any problem staying in the room. But I'll tell you what, I was about to leave the room.
I stayed in the room every time.
I stayed in the room every time too, but that's because of the way I was raised to endure abuse. So it worked. And I do like people barking orders at me. I was raised in a very controlling household, and I'm used to that. So it's like...
So you just live out your childhood twice a week.
Basically,
so there's a yoga teacher, like a hot yoga teacher? Like, wouldn't be a reason to go?
When it's hot yoga, you're in so much pain and trying not to vomit that you don't even notice anything. Your eyes just kind of go...
I always thought yoga teachers are good looking and stuff.
They're right.
Yeah, I mean... They're good.
They're not the ones bending over, though. They just walk around.
They walk around talking,
Oh, okay.
But my hot yoga is very...
Woman talking, that's not...
Okay. There are some hot women.
You said you like barking at them, so I thought...
It's very blue collar, the hot yoga in Queens. Maybe at 4 o'clock or one of those later classes, it gets like... hotter people in it, but
Bobby was here to plug his Manhattan yoga
studio. Bobby would be
we know where all the tens are.
He would have 10 plugs already. So that must be what I was getting to was I'm having trouble parking, and I parked in a different spot, and if I go and my car is either towed or there's a ticket, we're going to do a Kickstarter to pay the ticket because I'm not paying a ticket. And I'm not paying for parking in Ben's neighborhood. I refuse to do it. Even $3 is too much.
Yeah, okay, $2 that adds on up. The street.
No, it's the principle. I get where he's coming from.
Well, see, I don't like to move my car when it's alternate side.
Yeah.
Because it's suspended today, so I don't have to... And Thursday, so I don't have to move the car for a week.
Ben, you have it all figured out in your logical mind. I was going to say something very racist, but I didn't. Against you.
I think we can all fill in the blank on that one. But you're outnumbered today. There's two Jews on this podcast.
Two Jews on this podcast. But Eric, you're not practicing, are you?
No, not at all.
Neither am I. Jewish. I think we're about the same did you perform comedy on Yom Kippur?
Absolutely.
Me too. We're at the same non-level. Yeah. The Jews take off. So the fake Jews will do it.
You guys aren't allowed to do anything after sundown. That's why we have to do this podcast. I don't know. There was some kind of sundown. Ben, let's keep it moving. How was your weekend before we get to our special guest?
I was good. What'd I do? Friday, I did a couple spots. Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, a couple spots in West Village. Saturday, I...
Did you notice that with the crowds, or is it just me?
The first crowd was... the second crowd was a lot of fun, actually. Saturday, I headlined a Long Island one-nighter. It was fun.
Okay.
A little light, but got to do a long set, which was nice. Sunday hosted one show and I was kind of tired. Oh, and I saw my family, went to Connecticut.
Connecticut?
Connecticut.
Ben taking trips to Connecticut.
And I was in an actual sauna.
You went to an actual sauna?
Well, my dad's like condo complex has a clubhouse.
Condo racquetball court.
No racquetball. I wish there was a racquetball court. No.
Hey, but let me ask you about hot yoga. You stopped. You don't miss it at all?
I don't like the amount of the time commitment. Once I stopped going, I was so happy to have 3 hours of my day back.
Yeah, it does kind of drain. Any kind of workout, it does drain you. But then the next day when you don't have to, I take a day off in between, and it feels good.
Yeah, see, I was doing it every day pretty much, yeah, so I didn't have, it was just like, yeah, it just drained me.
And we have a guest today, and you've heard him, okay, so we've already introduced
him. Laughing and throwing in a comment.
He's throwing in comments, but Eric Bronstein's a very funny comic, and he's been working in the city. How many years have you been in the city now?
I don't know, I've been working hard maybe like six, seven years.
Very, very funny guy. Works all over, but mostly I know him from the Broadway Comedy Club. And he does a great job of, like, you mostly host there, but you do spots.
Absolutely.
But always sets a great tone. We were just talking about that before.
I did notice, though, the crowds seemed a little fucked up this weekend.
I mean, this weekend it wasn't about, like, the host or anything. It was just about, sometimes you get those crowds who are just, like, out-of-town people. Some of them are foreign, but at least the foreign people have an excuse. They don't know the culture.
Right.
The American people.
They claim they don't know the culture.
Yeah. The American people who don't know are.
Well, a lot of this could be fixed by a nice 45-second pre-show announcement.
But I
just, like, give the standard, hey, assholes, don't talk unless the comics talk to you.
Right. But I would like to jump on more with that. And I think that's important. But I think the clubs do that mostly. And I think the host, like, the shows I was on, the host did it. So it was just like a matter of the club does it, the host did it, but the people are such morons that they didn't fucking.
Or they don't care. They want to see what happens. It's more interesting.
Just, yeah.
When everyone has video on their cell phone, it's more interesting to make someone lose their shit than to listen to
the
shows.
I don't even think they're that premeditated. I just think that they think that that's what comedy is. Mm-hmm.
And that's as a host, that's why sometimes you can't overdo the crowd work, because then you get them in that mindset where it's a talking show. And I've learned that over years. I used to just work them over, and now I realize I can't. I do a little bit up top and set the jokes. Even if the jokes don't crush, at least they know it's a show.
Yeah. Well, it gets them into the rhythm of listening to jokes.
Yeah. Right.
But, I mean, that's a very unselfish thing to do as a host, because as a host, you know, you have the tendency. We all want to do well, and as a host, if you can just score off crowd work and you're good at it, then you kind of don't have to get into that much material. You could just do crowd work and take that as a win and then bring the first act up.
Yeah.
Versus the hard thing to do is, like, to do some crowd work but then just get them into the rhythm of jokes, and then it sets the table more for the show. But that's an unselfish thing to do. But I get it both ways. I get why, you know, because it's really the hardest to do.
Yeah, it is. I mean, especially in the city, because you have so many different types of cultures and people, you know what I mean?
Right.
People talk about how people from Boston comics, they go, oh, the comic just goes right up, he does his act, he kills. I'm like, yeah, because it's very homogeneous up there.
Yeah.
Everybody knows everybody.
A lot of whites.
Yeah.
A lot of Irish whites.
Yeah, so it's easy to do that. But in here, you're dealing, especially at, like, Broadway or some of these other, actually all the clubs now have tourists now.
Yeah.
There's no difference really in audiences anymore. You know, I used to see clubs like, oh, this club's more New York-y. Not really. I mean, the Stand seems a little more New York-y. But,
right. But it's like they can be tight too there, because they can be. I mean, it's a great club, and let's say this is no reflection on any of the clubs. It's just, I mean, sometimes you get audiences from that neighborhood, from that Gramercy, who are just like tight, very tight people, who are very financially well off.
They're
upper class, and they're very tight. They don't want to laugh at the wrong thing type of deal.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Plus, it's not maybe as exciting for them to go to a comedy show, be in New York. Like, some of these people are so excited to be in New York that they're just ready to go, you know?
Right.
But, yeah.
So, none of that's – it's the same from club to club, really. It's just more about the audiences, I think. But
I also think that tourism, I mean, has been great for New York City comedy. It kept so many clubs in business.
Yeah, it's true.
It's awesome. It's like the old golden age in New York for comedy. How many clubs are just out there succeeding?
That's the beautiful thing about New York. There's so many clubs. And there's even in the clubs, people have bar shows. There's so much opportunity to work.
Yeah.
So that's the great thing about it. That's why I would be, you know, uncomfortable to go to L.A. because just the number of spots would go way, way down.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter how great you are. You're just traveling around.
There's fewer shows to do.
Right. So, I don't know.
How was your weekend, Eric?
Eric, what's your weekend?
I don't know. I did a bunch of spots in a few places, and they all blend into me, so I can't really specifically itemize. But they were good, but I did feel like they were audiences seemed a little drunker, a little more. They seemed a little more chatty in some of the rooms, but maybe because it's a 3-day weekend.
Maybe that's what it was.
Is Columbus Day a real 3-day weekend, though?
Well, people don't You get off school, right? But then the post office, and that's not closed.
Well, it's a weird one. I got off today. That's actually why I'm here. But a lot of...
You're saying you wouldn't take a day off of work to do our podcast?
I would do it in a second, actually, to be honest. But I just don't have the days. Yeah, I don't think everyone gets it anymore, but I don't know.
What do you do during the day, Eric?
I'm in advertising.
Cool, man.
Yeah, not really.
And where do you live?
I live in...
I want the exact address.
He lives right by Bobby.
I do.
If he had given Bobby a lift, maybe Bobby would be here.
I know. I feel bad. I thought he had a car, because everyone where I live has a car.
He has... I don't know if he has a car. He borrows cars.
He did have
cars.
A car, but he borrows cars. Yeah, he does.
Borrows or...
That's different things. His different modes of transportation.
He usually takes the subway here. I know that.
Yeah. It's kind of annoying to take the subway from Forest Hills here. I don't know why. It's just, it should be easier, but it's not.
Just EF to Roosevelt Ave, and then you transfer to the RM.
See? Ben's got his big brain on. Ben has his stop. MT. He switched his brain to MTA.
Yeah, hop stop over here.
So what's your process, man, as far as, like, doing new material? Like, me and Ben work together and have written together at times, so, like, I kind of get a feel for his, you got a feel for mine. What's yours?
Well, you know, I can't just sit down and write. I know you do stuff like that.
Right.
It just doesn't come out. I mean, if I tweet or something like that, I can do that, but...
You tweet a lot. You tweet a lot of good, quick joke, monologue-y... Yeah,
that's stuff that, you know, maybe I'm doing at work, but maybe I'm not. For anyone who's listening. Maybe it makes the day go much, much faster. But, yeah, I lately have this new app on my phone. It's a talk-to-text. I mean, it's not...
So it's like Siri right. for poor people who don't have iPhones?
Yeah, I guess. But basically, you're instead of just writing down things, you know, in a thing, you just talk the joke out and you put it in there and it saves it. And it's actually really good. It's actually been a great way for me.
Okay.
Because writing stuff sometimes, I just forget about it in here. But when I talk it, I start scrolling and see the jokes. You know, I got to really be able to look over the stuff that I'm writing on a more consistent basis.
Do you tape all your sets?
I tape a decent amount, but I should probably tape more. Do you think that's helpful?
I think it is for some guys. I mean, I do a lot of sets, so it's maybe it would be, but I get so tired of it after a while.
That's what I
that I think listening to it is kind of overkill.
But don't you think, like, I mean, I feel like the taping's a little overrated. Maybe just videotaping, because you can see maybe things you're doing wrong, maybe, as far as maybe a little
math. Oh, yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
I'll get the DVDs from the cell and look at, like, it helps me. It does definitely help.
Yeah, because there's always something you might be doing slightly wrong that you right. don't notice. But I feel like maybe taping just audio, you kind of know how the jokes are working when you're up there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I never remember how they go, like, line by line. I know, like, if the set was good or bad, but I listen to everything or watch everything back. And until I watch it, it helps me, like, edit out lines that I think are funny but aren't. Because, you know, like, if a line hits one out of five times, you just remember the one time.
Yeah.
But if you watch and listen every time and you're like, it missed again. Oh, okay, I should stop doing that. So I find it helpful. But it's a time suck.
Yeah, it is. But, yeah, actually, it's probably a good thing to do.
Well, it is a good thing to do.
You helped me fix one of my thing jokes recently. Just something where you said I was taking too long to get to the punchline.
Oh, yeah.
And I fixed it, and actually it worked. It works much, much, much better. And I was like, wow, that's probably something I would have picked up if I was taping more, you know?
Right.
So maybe just have Ben watch every one of my sets and give me a report.
No, Ben is good that way. He's done it for me a bunch of times, and there's... I've written new jokes out of it, or he's given me a note and it's worked. So it's like the same thing.
Yeah, it's
in Soviet Russia. We watch everything.
That's right, Soviet Russia.
Well, how do you feel about notes? Because obviously, you know, you're a very well respected comedian. You've been on TV. So do you take advice from everybody, or some people, or I mean, like audience members? Obviously not.
Right.
But if a comic comes up to you, or do you like unsolicited? Because a lot of comics do not like unsolicited
right.
advice,
right?
And they get offended sometimes.
Yeah,
especially right after you get off stage, and someone goes, "That was a great job," but that almost means like I fucked up on stage when someone.
I never hear it that way.
Neither. Well, I don't really hear it that way either.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I hear it like, hey, this might, because they usually approach it like, hey, this might help. And because it's where their mind is, you could tell where their intent is.
Okay.
If they say something like, this might help, or if they come at you like, you know, it'd be really, you know, it depends what kind of energy they come at you with.
Right.
That's almost really where it's at. Because if it's like, if it's a comic who's self-aware and has like the good intent, then it's like, okay, I can either take it or I could leave it. They usually present it like that. Like, right. You could just take it or you could leave it, but I'm just offering it to you. I mean, I think that would be a good angle. So it's usually with the best of intentions. They're usually not coming at you or not coming at me like, hey, that's not good. You should end it this way. As a sort of like an ego thing, like, I'm better, so I'm telling you how to do it.
Or if they go, I have a similar joke, or they, as people say, and then they tell you the joke, and it's just like the same subject. I'm like, and you'll do a joke about the subway, and they go, I have a joke about the subway. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I think two people can do the joke about
the
subway.
Yeah, well, those are people who don't get it. Yeah. They really don't get it, yeah. So. But, no, I'm mostly open to it.
If it's someone I don't know, I'll just be like, hey, I had an idea if you want it. And if they don't, they'll just say, nah, I'm good. But most people at least humor my idea.
Yeah, no, you come up with some good stuff. Because I think you're watching comics more than a lot of other people. I don't know.
Yeah, it depends on who.
But my mom said something to me. She was like,
smile more?
Yeah, she said smile more. She's like, that's you have to big. Smile more. And that's big. That's something that I kind of like just brush over. But, you know, right before a TV appearance, she's like, you have to smile more because it lightens your face up, and it's just a nonverbal that the audience really will take a cue from.
And let them know they're in on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, I think you can get away with darker material when you're smiling. I mean, that's a big thing. But it's hard sometimes to even remember to do that. You know what I mean? You have to really kind of.
Well, the thing is, I think it's like an acting thing in terms of like be in the moment and enjoy the joke as you're telling it.
Right.
We're so in our heads up there a lot of times, like, okay, let me get to the next joke. Let me connect this with this. And we're kind of like thinking on our feet. There's a lot going through our head. But if you're like, just have a general map for the joke and then you just go up there and kind of like be in the moment. It's better for you. It's better for the audience.
That's true. You're not reciting stuff.
You're not just reciting stuff. You're like, yeah, you're really feeling it, and they can feel it. And the whole thing is, like, I had to learn about going on the road. It's like, going on the road, it's like you're armed. Like, we in the city, we arm ourselves with all these jokes. We use these 15-minute spots to build jokes. And then you go out on the road, it's like, okay, now I have all these jokes, and I'm going to try to get them out. But that's really not what they're looking for. They got a babysitter. It's a date night. They're coming out to see you. Even if they don't know it's you, they're coming out to, like, enjoy a personality.
Right, right.
So in that sense, is more of time to, like, loosen up and just be a person up there, and then you know you have all these jokes, you have them,
right?
But there's no hurry to like machine gun them to get them out. You're armed with them, so you could just go up there and be a person, entertain them, and then use the jokes at your discretion.
Yeah, it's a good point. Man.
I mean, it took me.
What's being a person? I don't understand.
Ben doesn't understand being a person because he's not a person. You can't teach a person how to be a person. I don't know. Now, Eric, you're Jewish, but you're not like this. What, are you from a different part, the what good part of Europe or something?
Well, he's Russian. That's all. That's weird.
What's
shit,
your background?
There might be some Russian in there, but it's a mix of German. You know, I mean, all of us probably left our whole countries because they were killing us, right? I mean, you left much later, though, your family.
In the 80s.
Yeah, I think my all relatives were like, generations ago, where pogroms, like I'm talking about the turn of the 20th century, like even before.
Yeah, Hitler. I mean, kill a Jew always comes in a fashion every 15, 20 years.
I'm not laughing at that, by the way. That was Eric laughing. Eric was laughing. I was not laughing at it. For
Mike
Jewish
was taking notes for when the next 15-year cycle
for
is.
For our Jewish listeners, I was not.
Well, didn't your family lead the persecution of Italy?
The Sicilian mob?
Was there a potato famine? Oh, that's a different
thing. No, I mean, there was
a pasta famine. Yeah.
There was never, I mean, anybody, I mean, from the south of Italy was poor. So, I mean, I'm third generation, you know, third, fourth, in some, because all my grandparents came at different times. My grandfather came over when he was 18 on my mom's side.
So they didn't conceive each other on a boat or something.
You know what, Ben? Please do not muddy up my family history with your storyboarding that you're doing.
No, I was just watching Godfather 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they have a flashback of when he comes to the country, and they call him Vito Corleone because he comes from Corleone.
Right. There's a lot of that. I have a friend.
Is there a Vecchione, Italy?
No, but there's. I have a friend named Mark Palermo. His name's Mark Palermo, and he's. Yeah, I'm sure that happened to him. Like, he's from, these people are from Palermo, Sicily, and he came over. I'm sure his name was something else, but they just saw Palermo and called him Palermo.
Right, right. That's an Ellis Island.
Yeah, there. They're like, I can't read this fucking name. Yeah. Your name's Smith.
Yeah, so that's what they did.
Okay, well, my name is Smith now.
Yeah, I seem to probably happen a lot with countries like Italy.
But it's like, it's amazing how the stereotypes are. It's like, you know, my family's just, like, we're just hardworking people.
Mushroom,
you know,
farmers.
Mushroom farm, a family business. Regardless of what it was, you know, they needed a business, family business, and worked in it. And it's the same with all ethnicities. It's, like, such stereotype where it's, like, you know, I was thinking about this today. I worked in the projects, you know, working with kids.
Were you a teacher?
Yeah, I was, like, a 3 to 5 year old who had tantrum behavior problems. Jeez. I'm special ed certified. So I go in and work with them, and it's, like, on 145th in the projects, like a very rough area.
Was this
Harlem.
Before you were a comedian?
No, this is what I've worked part-time. I worked part-time for a long time.
Oh, cool.
And this is what I did. And all the rap, all this stuff, it's like, and I'm sure there was like drug dealing stuff going on, but it's like, you know what I mostly saw? It's like people who were like coming home from work, just tired with groceries. Mm-hmm. And just getting into an elevator that smelled like piss to go up to their apartment. Yeah. That's mostly what I saw.
I mean, to be
like,
fair,
people who were just exhausted and tired from the day care. But that, you're not. That's not going to be in any hip hop anything.
No.
Or it's not. It's like, yo, son, we're out here. It's like these are just people who are tired fucking working and coming home to relax.
It's
like
not
everybody.
Boys in the hood. Like,
yeah,
every
it's
five
just
seconds,
it's just. You know what I mean?
To be fair, most elevators in New York City smell like piss.
That is true. That is true. But I distinctly remember that the elevator smelled like piss. And it's like for the hardworking people who are like bringing their groceries up and their kids and that, it's like, you know, it's got to be like fucking frustrating.
Yeah, and those people. I mean, I remember this one thing. You're from Philly, right?
I started comedy in Philly. I'm not originally from there.
But in New York, like one of the things, like Giuliani really turned around the city. And one of the things they always said that he was actually more popular in kind of the inner city areas of New York City because he fixed the crime so much. So it wasn't really popular to say that he...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Because he beat David Dinkins, who was like the first black mayor.
Right.
But he was actually more popular in the black areas than people would want to say because you couldn't say, oh, Giuliani... But he fixed the crime. I mean, like, you know, the Washington Heights.
Washington Heights,
that
where
was,
I lived.
Yeah,
I lived
that
there,
was, yeah. Like, where all the drug dealing went on. Like, that was, and they did clean that up. He did, I mean, I don't love Giuliani. Like, I thought he had some problems, but he did clean up New York. There's no, you can't
say
anything.
He did more good than bad, I think.
Well, I wasn't here during Giuliani. I came here in Bloomberg. So, how long have you been living here?
I've lived my whole life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I remember, like, you know, going into the city young and just seeing... I mean, there was like Houston Street. Forget about it. It was, you wanted crack. You would go to Houston Street.
Wow.
It was a disaster. I mean, just to see every time I drive on Houston Street and see like the Whole Foods, I'm like, this is insane. maybe 15 years ago, this place was the worst, absolute worst. Yeah.
Wow.
I always thought like Manhattan like was fine, and then it was just like the Bronx was a crack den.
No, I think that's now.
And like Times Square, I know used to be a crack den, but I thought it was just Times Square. You get your drugs.
No. I mean, I wanted to use this as a joke. This is like a real thing. When I was young, we would drive around that area, the Lower East Side. And my mom would say something like, if you don't do well in school, you're going to end up living here.
That's really great.
Yeah. Yeah. And now she's like, if you had done well in school, you would have been living
That's
here.
That's hilarious. That's really, really funny.
Yeah,
it's a great joke.
I just don't know where to put it in the thing, but it's kind of like a true thing. That was such a bad... I mean, Philly, though, come on. I mean, that area.
Yeah, well, Philly's, I think, progressively gotten... I don't know now. I haven't been back in so long, like in the city. You know, so I don't really know what's happening there, but it was, South Philly was, a lot of Italians, but it was rough. You know, I did dinner theater for a couple years in on 18th and Snyder, which is right in the heart of South Philly, but it's like a bad, really rough neighborhood. So, I mean, I don't know, man.
You ever been to, Red Hook, Brooklyn, which is kind of becoming...
I've been to the IKEA there.
Yeah, they're trying to make it, like, hipstery a
Ben's
little bit.
Ben's trying to make it as white as possible. Yeah, but to
but
the
that
IKEA.
Was, yeah, but that was the... I was reading about it, like, that was, like... And still, you could see where there would be a big drug area, because there's just so many places where you can hide and deal drugs. It was, like, the worst. They said it was crack central in the 80s.
Red Hook.
Well,
it's a lot of mob guys and mob stuff, like, mob
If Bobby were here, he'd weigh in.
Yeah,
he would. Oh, yeah, a bit of Red Hook. A couple times for
sit-down meetings.
Let me tell you, back in the 80s, my friend who might be a famous fashion designer, I'm not going to say Gucci or Armani, but you know who he is.
Bobby name drops every 5 minutes.
Does he? Who does he know?
I don't know.
He knows everybody. He knows the top guy of everything. Top barber. Top doctor. Top everything. Top.
Hey, you need an anal proctologist? I got two.
He knows everybody in every situation.
Is it a gay thing? Because he's like, you know.
He's part of a lot of different communities, I think.
Oh, okay.
Like former military, ex-con. Gay, stand-up comedy. He's in like a lot of different communities, so he's got his hands in a lot of different.
And he was in pots. He was in jail, all right.
Yes,
he twice.
But I won't go into. I'll let him.
Listen, episode 1 and 2 for more. Now,
were you a good kid growing up? Were you into sports? What were you into growing up?
Yeah, like, how did you get? Definitely not into sports.
How did you arrive at stand-up? You taking a shot at him? Start guessing.
I was a baseball pitcher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is a big baseball city.
Yeah, I was
not really as football as much. It's really baseball.
I was wild though. Like I threw hard, but they would throw me into like games late in the game if the game was already done with, and I would just go up there, hit a few batters, and
get pulled. How was your high school experience? Were you like good with girls? No.
Yeah, I was good later on. I think I started going into school plays and stuff.
Really?
Yeah, and then I did that and like musicals, and I can't sing for shit, but. You know, I wasn't really...
High school, the talent level's pretty...
Yeah, it was easy. I want to try out for a play. They're like, you want to be the lead? Like, that's how easy it was. So I was like a lead on a play, and basically after that, it was kind of smooth sailing. But I thought I wanted to go into acting, but then, I don't know, I think in college, I kind of saw who was in acting at the time.
Right.
And I just didn't fit in with those people. Should have stuck with that, I think, more, but I don't know.
What was your major?
Political science.
Oh, wow. And what was your goal?
I think I picked that major because after sophomore year, they said, what major do you want to be? And I'm like, what do I have the most credits in? They're like, political science. I'm like, it's
practical. Wow.
I mean, I'm into politics, though. I took all those classes because I never studied for any of those classes. Like, I knew everything, history and poli sci.
And what was the name of your college?
SUNY Oneonta, you know?
Oneonta, yes. Yeah. I know SUNY Oneonta.
The Harvard of the Hills.
Wow.
That's we actually had a professor who would say that in class. He goes, Oneonta, the Harvard of the Hills, and he would roll his eyes. The professor was making fun of the school.
That sounds, I mean, if your name's not pronounceable, that sounds about right.
Yeah, but he was making fun of it.
Right, because I don't think I could spell Oneonta. What?
Oneonta.
Oni Perez, what? I don't know.
Oneonta.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Penn State University, and then I got my master's in Cabrini College, which is a small Catholic college outside of the Villanova area.
Now, how many years more of school is that?
I went 5 because I was working during the day. I was working with kids with behavior problems, and then I would go to class at night.
Mike's older than he looks.
Wait, 5 years?
I'm actually 100.
But wait, 5 years?
At night.
Extra, after college.
I went to college, got my bachelor's, and I started working. Yeah, 4 years. And then I started working, and then I went back and got my master's, and it took me 5 years.
Oh, because you're doing it part-time.
Yeah, part-time.
Because after college, I was like, I cannot go to school anymore. I just can't.
Well, I was getting paid $9 an hour. I'm like, I need something else. Like, they're like, why don't you get a master's in criminal justice? And I'm like, and do what? I can't do anything with a bachelor's in this. What am I going to do with a master's in it? You can be a prison guard. It's like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
There's no job. Like, I like the theory. I love the classes. There's nothing I wanted to do with it. Prison guard, parole officer, law school was the best option. But then there were so many lawyers, and I took a class. And unless you think like Ben, you are not going to be good at that stuff.
Yeah. I wasn't good at it.
I wasn't good at it at all.
Well, I could tell you, just someone who's been in the work world for years, is that, you know what? It's good. People always, sometimes when people start comedy, they're like, did I make the wrong choice? Should I be the 9-to-5? And the 9-to-5 thing is worse than it ever is. There's just no company loyalty. They just
fired left. It's this false sense of security.
Yeah.
At least when you're doing comedy or like working for yourself freelance. At least know you have no gigs coming up and you got to hustle for something.
Yeah, and if you're good enough, you really can always work forever and make money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I used to tell my kids when I was teaching. My last 2 years, I taught high school, and I was teaching the kids, and I was like, you have to develop whatever you do. I mean, you have to develop, and I hate to sound like Liam Neeson here, but you have to develop a specific set of skills. And if you do that, then you'll always work.
Yeah.
If you develop, but if you don't, and you just think you're going to go out there and get a job, people will exploit you. They'll exploit you, and they'll replace that. You know, they don't.
Yep.
But if you're valuable, like if you make your skills, you make yourself valuable, then you'll be always working. You know, like you just said.
Yeah, especially in that economic.
But a lot of people like always downplayed like hands-on people, people who could fix things, people who could. And I'll tell you what, if you just get skilled in that, I mean, that's you can make a ton of money doing that. Where I was always raised, like it's like get yourself a education, a white collar or something or other. But they have to understand
you things, can't outsource a plumber.
Things are always changing. Yeah, yeah. Things are always changing. Mm-hmm. Like when I was in school, my father and mother were like, lawyer, doctor, these are the things that you, because to them, they equated that with wealth.
Right.
But it's like, I got out of college in the 90s, in the mid 90s. By then, it was like saturated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like things, and really what was to be better at was technology. If you were a computer guy or like what Ben was doing, right, you could just make a ton of money.
But even with that, because I remember 10 years ago, I took some IT class because they said, these are the jobs of the future, IT, right? And I took a couple classes. I'm like, I can't do this. This is just too hard. And then like a few years later, they're like, outsource all those jobs. And they were saying for years that those were the jobs.
No, nobody knows anything.
Right. But I mean,
if anyone's still listening to this...
Yeah.
40 minutes into our weekend.
Well, we're with special guest comedian Eric Bronstein here, just to refresh. It's me. It's Ben. Bobby is missing.
Which might be in jail again.
Well, no. It's usual. Every 5-6 weeks or so, Bobby goes missing. But thank God Eric came in.
We didn't even know Bobby would be missing.
We didn't know Bobby would be missing.
Mike and I would be up a paddle with no... up a creek with no paddle. Up a paddle with no creek. I don't speak English.
It doesn't matter. Both ways. Either way, he's probably looking for parking, Bobby. Because I know it took me an hour and a half.
Well, pop my dick in this little boy's...
Well, I have a question just in the last thing, because I want to hear your opinions on it, because a lot of these jobs now that are being replaced by robots, like a lot of jobs, they say even lawyers could be replaced by robots. They even had a robot comedian, you probably saw that, where the robot was telling jokes.
Do you think South Park?
No, in Japan, it was a horrible, they were just doing, it was doing one-liners, but.
Hey, it's horrible now, but check back in 5 years, it'll be on 6 different shows.
He'll have his own robot sitcom
in Montreal.
A Rob Rocom.
So you think, I'm being serious, you think you could that could possibly be a real thing where robots could replace actors and comedians?
I don't know about that, but on an IT level, that's a question for Ben.
Actors, absolutely. They have, like, video games where it's, like, all computer-generated with talking, and they can, like, they have, like, meshes of faces where there's, like, hundreds of different movements and muscles, and it looks... Like, a lot of that, like, I think even the Final Fantasy series of video games, or Grand Theft Auto, you have people, animated people, where there's no actual actors talking.
So, yes, it's already happening.
Yeah. You still need writers, though.
That's true. Eric, what are your goals in the business now?
Make a living.
You would like to just make a living?
Yeah.
It would be good for if you could just, like, go on the road and come back to New York, work in New York, work on the road.
Yeah.
But what about stability-wise? Does that mean, are you dating somebody now?
What are you, his mom?
No, I mean, let's get in-depth. We have this chance to talk to Eric, and let's use it. We don't have much time. I want to find out. We want to find out the whole person.
Yeah, it's a good thing I didn't research any topics today, because I knew the fucking weekend would hijack all the topics.
I'm sorry. Eric is here, and he brings a wealth of knowledge, so we have to get it. Let's get into it with him. Our listeners want to hear. He's a guy who was born and raised in New York City, which I didn't know, and he's come up through the clubs the way that we have, so I want to get his perspective on it. Ben? If I may.
All right, I hope none of our listeners catch Ebola this week because they didn't know to look out for it.
Well, this is the cure, this podcast. okay, so, Eric, you would like to work in the city and then have enough road work.
Yeah, I think not too much because I think that gets a grind. I mean, the one thing I work during the day, but the one thing it does allow me to do is not have to scrape for every stupid... I can be a little more picky of what I want to do. You know, I see people who are like, oh, I drove 300 miles for $100. I'm like, you know, but they give you a free sandwich. I'm like, it doesn't seem like something I'd want
to do. Depends on the sandwich.
Yeah.
If it's an open-faced club.
I mean, are
you... can email me at...
Ben's an emotional
Are you picky with stuff? I mean...
I do according to, like, need. Like, that's why I never burn bridges. Like, if people offer me money I'm not going to do that for that money. I'm not going to drive that distance for that money. I make more money in the city than that money is worth. Right. So, but I never, like, I never email them in, like, a condescending way. Like, I'm not doing that, dude. Right. Like, that's bullshit. Like, I never do that. I thank them. I can't do it, but thank you for thinking of me. And I go, because you never know what you're going to need.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and if You know, I'm at a level where I can, I know what money I can make. And I would like to make more. Like, I would like to make more money, but I know what I'll do and I know what I won't do. And I'm comfortable with it right now. Now, hopefully that the money grows and I can get more, but...
But you treat you... I see the way you act. You're very professional.
Right.
You treat your and you do it too. Comedy is a business. You know, you show up on time. You don't fuck around. You know, I think that's really important. I learned that just being in the business world. You have to actually treat it like that. And you're not rude to people.
You're not rude to people. There's a way you can say no without being like, dude, no, I'm not fucking doing it. There's a way you can be like, no, thank you. I appreciate you thinking. Because these people don't know. They're just trying to like book shows. Right. Like they're not thinking along those lines. And then if it becomes a negotiation, they're like, well, then maybe they'll raise money. Like, well, can you do it for this money then? It's like, I can't do it for that money. But if you bring it up a little bit more, maybe I'll do it. And right. Then they're like, okay. And then maybe you come to, instead of like just completely discounting the person.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then you have a gig and then you have the money that you want.
I got a one-nighter in Iowa. It pays in 47 chicken wings. One in like,
that sounds delicious. Unless you middle.
Plus, if you do something like that, that person will get annoyed with you. And then he'll start telling people that.
This guy's a dick. Mm-hmm. This guy thinks he's all that. And we're all, I don't know how you look at it, but the way I look at it, it's like we're all vulnerable. Because, you know, just the nature of the business is so crazy. Yeah. You know, you don't know who's gonna go where, you know?
Fine, 52 chicken wings.
You don't know who's going to end up where.
So many people.
Like that, a kid who just starts and it's like, hey, first of all, you should be friendly because you should be nice.
It doesn't cost anything.
It doesn't cost anything, and that's the way you should be towards people. You shouldn't be everybody started somewhere, so you shouldn't be shitty to that person just because they're just starting. And then the other thing is, who knows? This guy might do comedy for 2 years and then just fucking have a show.
Yeah.
And then he'll be like, you know what? I don't remember much, but I remember that you were nice to me.
In fact, they always remember the people when they first started. Comics always remember the people who are nice
yes.
to them. And if you're a dick, they will even remember that more. I know comics who are like, that person was mean to me once when I first started. I will never talk to them again.
Yeah, because you're vulnerable, especially then. And but even like I feel it when I go to LA or I feel it when I go to another city. It's like no one knows you. No one knows who you are. I mean, maybe a little bit because of some of the stuff that you've done. But generally, it's like that's not your circuit or whatever. So people can be shitty and condescending to you, and you know, then you feel like you're on the outs.
And I kind of think if you go to a situation like that, like where you go in there and they don't know you and then you go on stage and you kill. That may not necessarily help you. No, that may not, because then they're like, this guy's coming into our this guy's an awesome comic coming into our that's even more threatening for some people.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're like, yeah, go.
I don't want to move to fucking wherever.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like you almost want to just like the guy who's just like maybe in the middle where he's not memorable would probably have a better chance than someone who's really good. And a lot of times people will just respect you because you are good, but I could see people getting annoyed by it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's better policy to live your life that way. Yeah. Not just anything, just like, you ever see people who are just shitty to waitresses and waiters? It's just like, what are you doing? Like, these people work hard or any kind of like, what we consider like a menial task, like a person behind a counter or a person who does that. It's like those people, I think, need to be treated with even more respect because they're just doing, they're working hard. You know what I mean? And there's for a lot of these people, it's like no light at the end of the tunnel for them. They're just doing it to work hard to try to feed their family.
Bring their groceries up their shitty elevator that smells like piss.
I was saying that in a complimentary way. Like, those people
I was tying it together.
I used to live in the Upper East Side. I used to see this all the time. Like, because there was a lot of rich people in the Upper East Side. And you go to Duane Reade, and there'd be, like, you know, this black person behind the counter. And the person would be just, the rich white person would be so mean to them. You know, like, in a Duane Reade or something like that. Like, just unbelievably mean. And I'm like,
they already have it.
What?
You got to work at Duane Reade. You're already in a bad mood.
Yeah, exactly. But they didn't understand. And just getting paid $7 an hour for something has got to put you in a bad mood, right?
Right. I just don't think that regardless of your position in life that you should have to endure that you should be talked to like that. And I don't think anybody should feel like they have the right to berate another person just because of their social position.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's
wrong. You ever work as a waiter?
I worked as a waiter. I was the worst. That's why I have such sympathy for them. And I've done some shit job. I washed cars. I worked in a lumber yard. Like, it's like, that's, you realize that that's really not what it's about. It's not a good policy to have in life to be that way to people. It's not good energy.
Yeah.
I hate to sound too hot yoga-ish. I want everybody to bend to their left. You're going to see me lose my shit if I pay a parking ticket, Ben.
Do you have a mantra?
No mantra?
I don't do that?
No mantra.
Do you ever wait tables?
The closest I've come is when I host the New York Comedy Club mic and I got to give people drinks. And it took me like a month to figure out how a soda gun works.
Really? You actually pour the drinks out?
Yeah, because there's no bartender there when I host.
That's hilarious. And they had to buy drinks, huh?
No, it's just if you want a free soft drink. I'm not allowed to sell them any alcohol during it, only just free sodas. But it took me forever to figure out the soda gun.
All right, Eric, I'm going to dig deeper now. Your relationships.
Yeah.
Are you dating somebody?
I am dating someone. She's out of the comedy world, which is...
That's cool.
You were going to say, but she's out. You're breaking up with her on the podcast.
Wow, that would be monumental for us.
Listen to this show we did for 45 minutes and counting.
No, that's a cliffhanger ending. It really is. Like, Eric, we're talking about the just very methodic, talking about the business, talking about his goals, and at the end, it's just a twist. He just breaks up with her and then has her listen to it.
I'll have a mic, I'll just drop it.
Oh, my God. It's crazy.
We only have one mic, so
you How can't. Do you manage it, though, with your work and then going on the road and then staying in the city? Like, does she get it?
You got to find ways to make time, and it's hard.
You just keep her chained to a radiator in the basement?
Come on, Penn.
What?
That's Cleveland kidnapping. I thought we were past this now.
Actually, the one...
Oh, right, Cleveland.
The one situation is the girl I'm...
Ben, I'm getting worried.
She works really hard, so she's actually kind of tired by 10 o'clock.
Right.
She usually falls asleep by then, and that's pretty much when I start most of my nights.
Do you guys live together?
No.
So you give her the 7 to 10 shift?
Yeah. So it kind of works out.
The 7 to 10 shift.
Oh, my God. Ben's all over the place. He's making up for Bobby. 7 to 10 is a dick joke, everybody. For you listeners out there, we needed a dick joke. And it was perfectly placed.
I'll tell you what, Mike and Ben, those two dicks, that's a joke. I got a horse right here. 3 legs, that's what they call me back in prison.
That's Ben's impression of Bobby, everybody.
It's not bad.
So do you want to, like, in order to get on the road, you usually need, like, a show or something in order to get you out there. Are you looking for that? Are you?
Yeah, I mean, right now I just do kind of, like, one-nighters in local areas. Right. Not too far away.
Where can our listeners email you for gigs that pay in chicken wings?
Get a lot of those. Well, that's why I always plug
our websites and all that stuff at the end.
Yeah. But it's hard with back to the girlfriend, because I actually talked to your girlfriend, and I mean, she seems like a big comedy fan, which probably helps a lot. I mean, that really does. And she knew you actually before you.
Yeah, we knew each other. We met on Facebook, actually.
That's a big thing.
Yeah, so it was a getting to know each other process, because they see comedy, and that's cool. But then it's like you got to get to know the person.
They want to know the person, and you have the jokes in your arsenal,
right?
But they still get bored.
Thank you, Ben, for that call. Ben is bringing it all back around. He really is.
I'm trying to call it back together to end this fucking show so I can go see a movie with my girl.
Oh, my God.
But don't you think that, I mean, have you dated girls not comedians, right? So they get bored with going to shows after, I would say.
Yeah. 6 months. 6 months is the usual maximum.
Because we've been dating 5 months. So
you got to enjoy it for another
one month.
Sorry,
and then
Steph.
She'll be sick. Steph will be sick of coming to the shows. No, I think she gets it, and she gets what it is. And, we'll see. Like, but it's also me getting to know her and what she does. Like, she's a scientist. And, you know what I mean? Yeah. So
she bring over a lot of test tubes?
She does, actually. She did work this weekend on the computer, like, and was asking me certain stuff. And I was like, I have no idea. I taught 8th grade, and I stayed one chapter ahead of the kids.
Don't think that's where you dissect
frogs. She's, like,
frogs,
doing
right?
high. Yeah, we did dissect frogs. Yeah. And I was like, when I gave the kids, because it was kids with behavior problems, I gave them the knives. I'm like, look. The administration here doesn't want me to give you knives. Please do not stab each other, because I'll tell you what, it makes me look bad. I'm having faith in you by giving you these knives.
Did Jewish brother reverse guilt work?
It worked. It's also Italian guilt. Italian guilt and Jewish guilt are very similar. So, Eric,
we don't guilt with pigs.
By the way, when you did the frog dissection, because that's 8th grade stuff.
Yeah.
I remember you would pull out the heart of the frog, and you put it on a table, and then you would take adrenal fluid and that's what, at least what we did in our class. And then you squeeze it onto the heart. The heart would start beating outside of the body. This was just something that happened in my school.
Ah, I never did that. That sounds really cool.
That was awesome. I was like, that's why I remember it all.
Advanced enough to do that.
So what would you do?
But no, we had a dissection of the frog and everything, and we just labeled the parts. And because it was for a learning challenge, you know, kids who were not on the on eighth grade level.
Oh, some of them had kids ate the frog.
Some of them had delays. Ben, that's unnecessary. Unnecessarily cruel. But I mean, we'd do like a multi...
answer the question, Mike.
We would do like a different... I forget what it's called now. It's include all the curriculum. So we dissect the frog, and then we'd have to write eulogies about the frog, and then people would have to go up and give speeches about the frog. And we did all the add up the frogs.
Said the obituaries to the Times.
We did all of it. It's a cross curriculum.
Now, what about Buddhists who don't believe in, like, who believed in reincarnation?
There was none of this touchiness when I was teaching, even 10 years ago. Now the world has gone super. Because everything's accessible from the... This is pre-internet. So, when did the internet start going?
I've had it since 96.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, Ben. You're super technology-wise. Us working people haven't had it.
Just got it last month.
Eric, any final thoughts? Do you like to... thank you first of all, thank you so much for being with us. It worked out.
It worked out great.
Bobby wasn't here.
You know, if Bobby was here, you wouldn't get a word in.
You wouldn't get a word in, but at least we got
and
to, like...
And he'd call you a fag, like, 10 times.
Does he do that? Does he call?
He implies it more than says it.
He calls. He does. There's a lot of name calling. No, actually, Bobby like straddles that line between you know.
He implies that you're a sissy man, but he doesn't say you're a sissy man.
He's got a certain code that he lives by. Though, so I don't.
It changes every day, but he has a code.
But you're a guy that is. In the city that I see in the city as a well-respected guy, so it was great to have you on and you. To like. Hear, you know, your perspective on things.
Yeah,
is there any, you got anything coming up that you would like to plug for any of our listeners? Again, Eric Bronstein, very funny comedian.
Website, Twitter feed.
Yeah, just
glory hole you visit, you know, whatever.
Just ericcomic.com.
Ericcomic.com.
E-R-I-K.
K.
Yeah. Comic.com.
And what's your Twitter?
It's my name, but I spell it differently online. You can find me, Eric Bronstein, Twitter.
Eric Bronstein on Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us. Ben, final thoughts?
I'm glad I didn't plan any topics. You didn't even acknowledge my devious... I'm not going to write any more topics because no one cares about the fucking topics.
Ben is
pouting. That's going to be a big Kaiser Sose moment of this show.
Ben is pouting, everybody.
Just ignored it.
Ben is pouting. Ben is officially pouting. We'll see if Ben can pull it together and stop his tantruming for next week.
I'm not writing any more topics until further notice. I'm not planning this show. Those 8 minutes I spend before you and Bobby get here, where I just jot down some headlines without reading the story so we have something. I'm not doing that
anymore.
He's doing
a lot of research. He was,
I'd like to thank special guest Eric Bronstein for coming
you,
on the
Eric.
Show. And I would also like to thank Ben for being his usual cheerful self. thank you
so
much.
I'd like to light a candle for Bobby because I texted him, are you okay? He didn't respond.
Bobby, we hope you're okay. We hope to see you next week. I'm comedian Mike Vecchione. Happy Columbus Day, everybody.
We'll see you next week.
That was fun, man.